Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Welcome to another Peak Prosperity Podcast. I am your host, Chris Martinson, and today we're recording our weekly podcast from the Utah State Capitol Building. Over the past day and a half, I've had the honor of engaging with members of the Utah State Legislature who have just passed a series of bills known as the Financial Ready Utah Initiative. Financial Ready Utah was created to address the question, how do we make the state less vulnerable to another 2008-style or worse financial crisis? How do we make Utah more resilient at the state level, at the community level, even at the household level? Joining me today are Representative Ken Ivory, who was instrumental in the passage of the Financial Ready Utah legislation, as well as Dan Griffiths, a representative of the Utah Association of Certified Public Accountants. The UACPA has partnered tightly with the state of Utah to bring a nonpartisan, data-driven voice to the movement to educate both politicians and citizens that the need for greater financial readiness is not a question. It's just math. I'm very excited by what the state of Utah is doing here, the first real example I've seen at the state level for a frank, adult-sized conversation on the risks we face and the wisdom of adopting many of the resilience-building practices we recommend here at peakprosperity.com. Dan, Representative Ivory, thank you for taking time for your busy schedules for this interview.
Great to be here with you.
Thanks, Chris. It's been great to have you here with us.
All right, well, let's start by a little background. So how did the Financial Ready Utah Initiative get started? Just a summary. Like, how did this go from idea to enacted legislation?
You know, quick summary, it started when I was elected. I have been concerned about these things most of my adult life. It's the reason I ran for office. When I got in, I realized we had no idea how dependent we were on federal funds. I passed some legislation that required all state agencies to look at the percentage that their budget is reliant on federal funds and what their contingency plan was. And that started an education process and realized that was just some minor quantification. Now we needed to get into a more qualitative analysis. And Dan had gotten back from some things with the AICPA, and they were pulling the alarm bell, if you will. And we partnered together through a local chamber of commerce and started pulling the package together, got a number of legislators involved, and off we went.
Yeah, it's been a great experience seeing how members of the community have come together to engage in these questions. This has not been a legislative effort driven by legislators or party politicians. It's been driven largely by chambers of commerce, CPAs, business leaders, concerned members of the community. Many of from the preparedness community have gotten engaged and involved with this. So it's been fun to see it take a real grassroots approach as opposed to tops down.
Those critical success factors seem there's widespread involvement. When you first started taking this story out, what was the reception you received?
You know, you made the comment of adult-sized conversations. People get that. I think all too often people in public service, politicians, go on the fear factor and the least common denominator, but people get that. They understand that we're in trying times. The numbers don't add up. We're printing. The debts don't add up. We can't do that forever. And what does that mean for our kids? And I've found repeatedly in my campaigns and in this process that, at least in Utah, people are ready to have adult conversations. What do we need to do? Lead the way. If it means sacrifice, but there's an end in sight, let us know what it is. And I find that people are responding to that. And, you know, Dan's experience in our communities from the bottom up, that really is the key to the story. That's the power of our system if we really engage in it.
Mm-hmm. And what I've seen is two keys. First, giving people real information that they can believe in and trust, not trying to spin them into some kind of action or result that we're looking for, but just giving them the truth. It's so refreshing when they hear someone come in just willing to tell the truth. And accountants have a unique opportunity there because we're perceived as independent and objective and honest and those sorts of things. So we can bring that. And then the second thing is giving people concrete steps they can take in their own lives to take small actions to begin to do something. Many will sit there and watch cable news programs and get all worked up into a frenzy and get upset and afraid, and the uncertainty is what's killing us. But giving people opening their eyes to the fact that there are some steps that they can take as individuals, as communities, as families, to begin to prepare. There's great peace that comes from preparedness.
Well, excellent. So this sounds like it's a partnership then. There's obviously the state legislature is working, and you've got the private CPAs and other private groups that are trying to come together. So let's talk about the legislation for a second. What is this legislation exactly?
Well, the cornerstone of the legislation is a bill that was run by Senator Deidre Henderson. And what that did was create a federal funds review commission. Mm-hmm. What we learned in this process is that the state of Utah, as with virtually all states, is somewhere between 30% to 50% dependent on federal funds for their state budget. You know, imagine you're a company and 40% of your revenues come from a single source that is telling you in their consolidated financial statements that they're broke. Probably ought to have a contingency plan. And so as we looked at that, what the legislation does is it creates a federal funds review commission, which we had the honor of having you be our first witness yesterday and mm-hmm. and kick off the vision for that commission. The mission of that commission is to, number one, assess the risks. What are the various risks, so many that you talk about, that may impact that 40% that impacts how we educate children and provide public safety and roads and take care of sick people and poor people? What are those risks so that we understand them, we look at them with our eyes open, start to formulate plans and analysis at a state level, which is going to be hard. I mean, from a state budget standpoint, and clearly there's no way from a state budget standpoint with the size that the risk could be that we could solve all those problems. And so the third step becomes, how do we begin to engage our very rich community assets, our churches, our community groups, our people in non-traditionally providing public services, which I shouldn't say non-traditionally, it's almost going back traditionally to provide public services in a way that we used to when we cared for each other and built the kind of resilient communities that you talk about so effectively.
All right, so now that the legislation, it's been passed, is that right?
The legislation's been passed. There are a number of other bills that require in our legislative budgeting process, our governor's budgeting process, our rainy day funding process to take into account the risk of a reduction in amount or value of federal funds and other risks that may impact our budget and what we do. So yeah, we had about seven different bills that have all passed as a package. And so now we begin the process of figuring out how we build this model mm-hmm. and move forward. And you know, the presentation we just had this morning to 20 or 30 House and Senate members, what a great step. Yesterday with our Executive Appropriations Committee, the presentation you gave as well there that really sets that vision so that as we start moving forward to implement, we kind of know where we're going. We may not know necessarily how to get there, but we have a good vision of what needs to happen and how we may be able to set the model for other states to rally to and work together, because we know the answer is not going to come from Washington.
Now, to set the stage for listeners, we're in a room. It's got a big horse-shaped mahogany table of some sort, a lot of chairs, and there were How many state legislators were around the
probably
table?
About 25 to 30, yeah.
Yep. And I got to deliver a crash course light, and we were talking very honestly about the risks. And I saw, my perception was there were a lot of nodding heads. There are people who are very aware of this. I saw a few eyes go a little bit wide at a couple of points. But I really felt that the message was received. And so this is interesting to me that Washington, in a lot of what I read in the newspapers, is just projecting that everything's recovering and that any discussion that there might be anything other than recovery is somehow off the table. And here we had, I thought, a very open conversation, which I felt was received relatively well. What was your perception of it?
I thought it was received very well. You know, when you talk about exponential debt requiring demanding exponential growth and the impossibility of that doubling perhaps even one more time, let alone repeatedly in an exponential sequence, that seems to resonate very well. We feel that, right? We feel that, and as representatives of the people, we feel that, but sometimes it's hard to put your finger on it. But I think that really hit home, and then, you know, that creates an opportunity. I think in Utah, we come from a pioneer heritage, many of us. That's the starting of our history. People that grabbed a handcart and walked 2,000 miles, some of them barefoot, to come to a desert and make it blossom as a rose. We see maybe an opportunity to kind of lead out in a new pioneering experience, muster up some of that DNA and figure out how do we go through this pioneering experience that doesn't necessarily have to be worse. It could be something different but better.
Mm-hmm. Likewise, one of the things that really resonates in Utah is earthquakes. We live on a fault line, and everyone here is very accustomed to planning, preparing for earthquakes. And so to be able to take that planning and preparation and those planning and preparation networks and then say, well, we need to be preparing for financial earthquakes. there's some serious things that are on the horizon, and we hope we don't ever have to use these disaster plans that we're putting in place. But it will be so much better for all of us if we can help our communities get mentally, emotionally prepared for an event that might happen. It's no different than having school children do a drill where they crawl under their desks so that they know what it's like if an earthquake were to happen. And some of that fear might go away and allow them to better deal with it. We're trying to do the same thing here from a financial standpoint and say, what happens if we have a financial earthquake? And let's put a plan in place. We hope we never have to use it. But if something did happen, at least we've prepared ourselves and we've braced ourselves for that impact.
Well, that's so refreshing to hear. You know, it's been a long time in my work of pushing the story and then to find that there's a receptive audience for it, which this is just common sense, right? There's really, it's math. It's common sense. We add it up. And it's interesting that in businesses, so as a CPA, I'd be interested in your response to this, but my experience in business is that what businesses do is they look at their competition, they look at their assets, they look at the risks, and they have plans. And then if plan A doesn't work, they go to plan B. But no business just has a single, you know, sort of a response. But I think the request we're being asked at the national level is you're going to have to depend on the federal government. And whatever it does, you're just going to have to accept and to plan that might not turn out as hoped just seems prudent and rational. And I'm wondering if is that the right framing? Is that what you're experiencing at the business level?
It's one of the reasons why I think the conversation started with chamber groups, with CPAs, with others, because business people really get this. When they look at the federal financial statements, their mm-hmm. eyes bug out, and they think, if this were a business, this would be crazy. And then when we break that down and we say, well, what about states? So Representative Ivory mentioned that we've got approximately 40% of our government spending here in Utah comes from federally sourced funds of one sort or another. If I were a business and 40% of my revenue were derived from a single source, I would have a whole set of contingency plan B, C, D, E, F, to ensure that if anything happened to that source of revenue, we'd have some plan in place to deal with that. We met yesterday with the Utah Association of CPAs and the president, Kent Thomas, who's a CFO for a company down south of here, said, you know, I'm working with a company who had 25% of their revenue coming from a single Fortune 500 customer. And they knew that this customer was having some internal struggles. They were having some ownership transitions and changes. They were having some leadership issues. There were all kinds of things going on. So they didn't wait for a call to say, oh, by the way, your orders are going to be cut in half. They had a plan in place well ahead as they saw some of that writing on the wall. And he said, you know, last fall, they had to use that plan because this customer ended up having some major hiccups and their revenue got cut in half from that single customer. So we need to be doing the same thing here in our state, and hopefully other states are doing the same.
All right. So now that the legislation's been passed, Ken, what are the next steps here? How will you identify them, and where does it go from here?
Well, your visit here has been a great starting point, launching point for the next steps. Assessing the risks. We think we've got a reasonable idea. I mean, you've elaborated on a number of them. We've kind of known them, but we're seeing this already. Even over the last couple of months with sequestration, the federal government's reaching in and not cutting its expense. It's cutting our revenue items, you know, items that come right out of the land. The monies that were supposed to come off of forests to educate children, they're not only cutting those back, they're reaching back in time and saying, you have to pay back what you've already spent. I mean, imagine that. That's just unfathomable that they're reaching in to do that. They're taking mineral lease money from revenues that are extracted right out of the ground and taking that revenue out of local schools and local economies. That's happening right now. And so those alarm bells, we've been seeing them from the dependency, but that took it to a new level. So looking at those contingency plans, you know, the kinds of things you talked about. We led the nation in passing gold and silver as legal tender in the nation. Now it's a matter of how do we implement that? How do we look at some transaction mechanism that, again, we hope we never have to use, but to not think about this exponential money system having risks and potential hiccups and having a plan B, as you say. You know, that's certainly one area to look at. The other area that we're working on with the CPAs, and we're so fortunate to have groups like that, the chambers and others in, how do we begin building the community links? And so we develop the information develop the legislation that allows communities to have more flexibility in their rainy day and contingency planning. You know, those are the kinds of things we're going to look at from now to the next legislative session to build those mechanisms.
Has there been any interest from any other states in what you're up to? Is anybody looking over your shoulder and asking, maybe showing interest in that?
Yeah, there have. I just came back from a national meeting of state legislators in Oklahoma a couple weeks ago. The Oklahoma speaker is working on some things, I understand. There's some legislators in Texas we've talked to, legislators in Arizona, North Dakota, New Mexico, a number of other places that they're feeling and seeing the same things. I mean, in Wyoming, for example, this mineral lease issue, $53 million. They just get a letter out of the blue saying, yeah, that revenue that was yours, we're going to call that cutting our expense and just take it away from you. It's unheard of. Our system has evolved to something it was never intended to be. It was supposed to be 50 laboratories of freedom and of innovation. Well, we've consolidated that to a level now that we only have one firewall of risk. If the federal government has a hiccup, that affects everyone. Well, our system was never intended to be that way. And so we've got to restore balance in that partnership and pull that back down so that we can innovate in these 50 different laboratories and have these kinds of experiments in resiliency that you're talking about. And we're thrilled that there is the urgency building to start making that happen, because that's going to have benefits on a number of levels that go beyond economics, that go beyond politics. It goes back to how we preserve our liberty and our prosperity and our peace.
Well, speaking of that federal rebalancing against state powers and rights and things like that, is the federal government showing any interest in your action so far?
Consolidating powers tend to continue to consolidate. That body in motion tends to stay in motion. And
yes.
So, no, it's going to have to be a team effort among the states, and we're working on that very, very diligently. But that's the nature of our system, and that's why having a state sovereignty and a federal sovereignty was actually the genius of our founding system, so that you would have not only checks within government, but checks between and among governments. We've kind of forgotten who we are because we've had our hands out for so long. Well, now the handout is not getting filled. In fact, they're taking away. And so that raises a lot of really fascinating questions about the balance in this partnership and what is a partnership and what should it be. And so that's moving forward that I think is going to be a very interesting dynamic in starting to build this economic resiliency as we go forward.
But the system is open to it. I mean, the Supreme Court opened the door wide open in the Affordable Care Act decision, where they said states are sovereigns. Sometimes they just have to act like it. That's directly out of their opinion. So the door is certainly open to those conversations. But as Ken said, it's going to take having states stand up and act like states, because otherwise, you know, bodies in motion stay in motion, and the federal consolidation will just continue.
Interesting. So, Dan, from the private side, from the CPAs, what role do you see the CPAs playing in really in the internal state partnerships? How are you going to help bring this financial readiness initiative forward and enact, I guess, really bring home some of the meat that's in the bills that have been passed?
So here in Utah, we have about 4,000 CPAs. And, you know, across the country, there's about 400,000 that are members of the American Institute of CPAs. Our hope is that some number of those CPAs can go out into their communities and can share some of the things that you've been here sharing with us today, can talk about how do we start building resilient communities. CPAs have a tremendous amount of credibility when it comes to the numbers. So when we come in and show the AICPA's evaluation of the federal government's financial statements and show that even in their financial statements, which are probably lack some credibility in certain ways, especially since the GAO can't even issue an unqualified audit opinion. But even if you could take their statements at face value, the total liabilities reflected there exceed the net worth of all U.S. citizens. And so when we can come into CPAs and go into PTA groups, chamber groups, Kiwanis clubs, gatherings of educators, and we can have these conversations with them and say, look, this is totally unsustainable, but guess what? We can do something to prepare, and we can build resilient communities here in our state. And hopefully that begins to happen all across the country. So I think CPAs do have a role to play, and we can speak probably in ways that legislators aren't at liberty to speak because of their positions and needing to get reelected. But we're in a place where we can be independent and say, look, the math just doesn't work, and we need to start preparing.
You know, and I think the power of what Dan's talking about is this transcends politics. It's a math problem. It's not a political problem. And so to lay that out and look at how are we going to educate our children as we're already seeing the federal funds that make up 40% of our revenues go away. How are we going to take care of sick people and poor people? Because the federal government's not offering, as they're taking that money back, saying, hey, we've got an alternate plan to educate your children or take care of your sick people or poor people or maintain your roads and provide public safety. And so that's a very real responsibility that's on us. But those things aren't partisan. And so the opportunity to really kind of get beyond some of the toxicity that mm-hmm. we've been seeing in politics, mostly at the federal level, but it runs downhill a little bit. To get beyond that and say, guys, we've got serious things to consider, and we're all in the same lifeboat, or we're all in the same boat moving forward. The CPAs have a big role in helping transcend that, because it is a math problem.
I love hearing that this is happening. It's just, to me, it's common sense. But it also seems rational and prudent, and it's such a relief to know that there's an entire state, as it were, that's decided. Well, we're gonna pick ourselves up and we're gonna be responsible for our own outcomes, and we're gonna manage this predicament as well as we can and get started on this. And that's really just it's wonderful. It's I'm sorry that it has to be done, but I'm glad that it is being done. And so I'm wondering, Representative Ivory, if you have any advice for any other state legislators who might be listening to this, how they might get started on something like this in their state.
I think getting started is a matter of education. Drilling down to the basic facts, your site does a great job in laying a lot of those out. I strongly recommend the CRASH course. I was converted many, many years ago and had the cottage meetings and brought the friends over and say, you got to see this, you got to listen to this story, and maybe our story is going to be different. And then it becomes very consistent with the other things that we're seeing when you see the mm-hmm. exponential debts and deficits and the international actions. We sense that and we know that. So education is a number one key. And then just understanding our responsibility. This isn't about a next election at this point. I think we sense that as well. This is about the next generation, and what does that look like, and how do we prepare for our states in a way that, unfortunately, we're not seeing that guidance out of Washington. And fortunately, how fortunate we are that in our system we still have that opportunity to affect change at different levels. It's not about hitting the home run in Washington. It's about my community. And how great that one CPA in one chamber of commerce with one city can start pulling things together and affect state policy. And as we begin to work with other states, affect multi-state policy that then starts to change the dialogue nationally. What a great system that is, right? It's still here if we simply engage. And, of course, the things you point out, it's time to engage.
Absolutely it is. Well, Dan and Representative Ivory, it's been a real pleasure talking today. I wish you all the success. Of course, I'm going to be in contact with you over time because I'm tracking this very closely. And anything we can do to help, Adam and I are obviously way on board. And I'm sure the Peak Prosperity community as well, because this needs to be done. And bringing it out into the open is a refreshing, needed, and unfortunately bold thing to do. But hopefully we'll become less bold over time as the trailblazers show that it can be done. Nothing bad happens when you do, just good stuff. So thank you so much for your time today.
What a pleasure. The door's open in Utah for you always. Thanks for coming.
Thanks. We're thrilled to have you here.